And we are live.
Wow.
Live from New York.
I'm thinking I'm back.
It's Saturday night.
I'm Zach. It's only Tuesday.
What song is that? That wasn't the SNL song.
No, it wasn't. What the fuck was it? It was like a news sting, I think. It's the Pittsburgh.
It is the KDKA.
News at 11.
News at 11. KDKA. Pittsburgh News.
Pittsburgh's number one. Place for news. Oh, how are you feeling?
Somewhat better. After what? I took a nap? Or?
Well, yeah.
Well, the listeners haven't heard from us in a while. Yeah. I've had COVID for 3 months, and that's why we haven't recorded. Just kidding. Staying topical for you all.
That was so funny.
Yeah, I know. No, we haven't recorded because we are fuck-ups.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we haven't recorded.
The motivation, the artistic inspiration.
Also, hasn't been there. Haven't really been consuming much, like, new shit that's coming out, because not a lot of new shit coming out is very good.
That's right.
So, we're hitting y'all with the switch-up. Real quick, now, before we did these, you know, these long sort of multi-part episodes where we talk about shit, that we like, we have discussion, in-depth discussions about some of the things, these movies, these albums, these whatevers that we've experienced, and we talk about them all in one episode, and that's not changing, but what is changing...
Oh, no.
That is still the that's still the content of this, is us shooting the shit about that kind of stuff. But what is changing is we are cutting things down a little bit.
That's right.
Whereas before, we would have episodes, we talk about 3-4 albums, we talk about 2 or 3 movies or whatever.
The subjects, they were out of control.
It was just too much. Too damn much.
Now,
our new catchphrase. Or did we just have a new catchphrase?
Just like my back acne. It's hurting.
So going forward, we are.
Whoa! What the fuck just happened to your phone?
Whoa! Very white now.
That's great.
Going forward, we are not doing that anymore. We will be, in all likelihood, we'll be releasing more episodes, or episodes on a more frequent basis, at least. Still no set schedule, of course. We don't do this for a living. Yeah, come on. But episodes will probably be released on a more frequent basis, because episodes will consist of pretty much just one single subject or one single topic that we're talking about. So today, for instance, it is October and we've been watching our scary movies. And we recently watched...
Hit the sound drop. It's the Wilhelm scream.
Beast.
Oh, wrong one.
We recently watched Exorcist 3. William Peter Blatty's Exorcist 3. And we kind of want to talk about it. But that's the only thing we're going to be talking about. So this episode is probably going to be shorter. And going forward, our episodes are going to be probably a lot shorter. And the dynamics of the conversations are going to be a little bit different, because we're also not focusing on just new stuff anymore. Like, this movie came out in, what, 1990 or something like that? We're drawing on everything. Or we're drawing on pretty much anything that we feel like we want to talk about.
The history of human invention is up for grabs.
Nothing.
And baby.
It's off the table.
That's right. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Mm-hmm. But episodes are going to be a lot foot much. It's laser focused on one thing now. So, we think that'll lead to more content from us, and to a much easier time talking about them.
That's right, sir.
And now, salutes. This is...
Salutes.
More podcasts about buildings and food.
Hit the theme song.
What is the SNL song?
Oh, fuck, what is it? It's been so fucking long since I've watched SNL.
It has been forever. We used to watch it a lot.
Yeah, back when it was, like, at least somewhat funny.
I don't know if it ever was.
I don't know if it was either.
I think we were just young. What's the adage about SNL?
The guy died that did the intro.
The guy died. Fucking Donald Fagen over here.
And it's your host.
Donald Trump.
Trump comes out.
Hello. Thank you guys. It's beautiful to be here in New York City. Great town. Do you remember 9/11?
Wonderful city. We're stronger now.
What was his opening monologue like?
Oh my god.
When he was running for...
It's probably more coherent than it would be now. One must think.
He was, because he did host SNL, right? When he was running for president?
Yes.
That's insane.
Very funny.
Extremely wild. What was his... I kind of am really curious what the fuck his monologue... Was it like a stump speech?
No, it was probably some fucking canned, like, routine.
Yeah, well, wasn't Bill Burr's just how much he hates women or something like that?
No, Bill Burr's was how much he hates white women.
Okay, in that case. Based. Like, I wonder. I've literally never even thought about this until then. I have had zero interest of ever going back to engage with
that. Can you imagine watching SNL reruns?
Oh my god.
What circumstances lead you to that?
Well, I guess like modern era SNL reruns. Because it's like... I'm sure you could...
No.
I'm sure the old ones are fine.
I'm just going to turn on a full episode of SNL from 1984.
Like, this is one with old school. This one with
god.
With the nun or whatever.
No,
the
you're just like woke up to sketches.
Oh, I mean, yeah, we are. I'm thinking about our old listeners. audience.
So the circumstances that lead you to watching SNL reruns is be decrepit and ancient.
Unable to use a phone.
Infirm.
You're scrolling 2 a.m. on your channels and, oh my god, they're showing the Police Academy sketches now. And then you're reminded how much the boys in blue sacrifice every day.
You're reminded of the good old days, back when you were young, you had a family.
Yeah. And they visited you.
Yep.
But now, you can be reminded of that while watching Exorcist 3.
That's right.
William Peter Blatty's Exorcist 3. We watched that. That was a segue. That didn't really work, but we're here now.
Yeah. No looking back.
We
watched The Exorcist 1, the original, the classic, the one you know and love.
We ain't here to talk about that, though.
Yeah, but we did watch that in the time between... the fucking last episode we did, I guess.
Well, okay, real broad there. Well, what shit earlier this month?
But The Exorcist 1, pretty good.
Very good movie. Very scary.
Very scary.
My phone. Oh, I'm getting group meme notifications. That's why.
Fuck.
The Exorcist. The Exorcist 1, directed by William Friedkin.
The legend.
Scary ass movie. One that I've been afraid to watch for a while now.
Were you more afraid of watching that one or Ringu?
I think Exorcist. Because okay. I think the discourse around The Exorcist is so like sort of famous of like people, like, going insane in the movie theaters and shit like that. People thinking that, like, this movie is, like, demonic and cursed, which it kind of is, frankly.
Not as cursed as the third one, but...
Yeah, maybe not. But I think that had seeped into me so effectively that it was like, well, that's a movie that I just don't think I'm ever gonna watch. And I did, because now I like horror movies. And honestly... I mean, I'm not gonna do this right now on mic, but, like, Exorcist 3... Or not Exorcist 3, Exorcist 1 has an argument for being probably the scariest movie I think I've ever watched. Like I said, I'm not doing this right now on mic, but like...
I'm trying to think of what I would even say for that.
Wow, it's unanimous.
Wow, oh my god.
But it is a frightening movie.
I think that Universal is Dracula.
Yeah.
Really, that's a chiller.
Yeah. Bride of Frankenstein. No, the one with the train that comes into the camera.
Oh, the...
Where everybody, like, freaks out.
I think that's an urban myth that people in the theater, like, thought it was coming at them. Like,
I don't think so. They were stupid back then.
Well, okay. As what were we just about to say, that, you know, people weren't stupid. They could see that.
Well, that's where you're wrong.
I mean, do you think that they looked at their eyes just had like a black and white filter on them or whatever, and they were like, they couldn't discern the difference between, they thought they were looking at a window.
I don't know.
They said, why the fuck are we all sitting in this big theater to stare out the window at this train coming in?
I wonder,
oh my god,
if they knew in advance, like, this is a movie, or if, like, whoever directed that was like, I am taking volunteers, come here and watch this thing.
Oh,
that would be really funny.
You wonder if they knew in advance if it was a movie before, despite it being, like, the first movie. I think, no, they did not know that it was a movie.
Well, I wonder what they were, I guess I wonder what they were told it was. Probably just, like, a moving picture.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, like,
whatever, a train.
If it was like, come, feast your eyes on something you've never seen before.
What's, like, the French mid-Atlantic accent?
Feast your eyes on something you've never seen before. That's just kind of Cajun.
Well, that's not far. Anyway, so The Exorcist 1, written by William Peabody.
I'm gonna take a shot in the dark here. He was Catholic.
Absolutely. I am the most Catholic man that's ever fucking existed, probably.
Look, religion, in case you couldn't tell from the titles, religion plays a starring role, starring religion in these fucking movies in some really troubling ways.
But yeah, Blatty wrote The Exorcist 1. He wrote the books that they were based on as well. And then directed The Exorcist 3 about, what, 15, 18 years later?
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how the gap between the...
I think it was 15.
Well, you keep referencing 15, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I fell down these stairs. But I don't know if that's actually...
15, I fell down these fucking stairs. They're still here.
But yeah, Buddy directed the third movie. The second one, directed by John Borman, who made the great film Point Blank, and also made Deliverance, which I have not seen. Second movie is reportedly really bad.
Yeah, so we didn't watch it.
Yeah.
No idea what it's even
about.
Don't
really have any sort of plans to watch it either.
Yeah.
But third movie, directed by Peter Blatty, William Peter Blatty. Second movie that he ever made. One of two movies in his career. First one was The Ninth Configuration, which seemed fucking weird based on the poster.
Yeah, the poster's awesome. It's an astronaut on the moon, and he's, like, staring across the moonscape at Jesus on a crucifix.
Yep.
That okay, appears to be there.
Absolutely insane.
One of the craziest images I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and almost single-handedly makes me want to watch
it. Yeah, me too.
Don't really know a whole lot about that movie, but The Exorcist 3... Sorry. Gotta clear the mucus out of my throat.
Yeah.
Good audio.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Alright, we're back. Yeah. So The Exorcist 3 is basically the work of a almost practically non-professional filmmaker.
Yeah, it's kind of wild,
if you think about it.
That's really wild, actually.
And so what's it about, Zach? Give us the rundown.
Well, first,
a little IMDb synopsis.
First, really quick, for those who may not know, so this is in a series, so the first Exorcist is about the very, very quick and dirty of it. A young girl in the Washington, D.C. suburbs is possessed by a demonic presence. And it is the job of a sort of, priest in crisis named Damien Karras to exorcise this entity from her, and hijinks ensue. At the end of Exorcist 1, Karras is expelled from the little girl's room, down a very, very, very long flight of stairs out right outside the house, where he is presumed dead at the bottom. Exorcist 3 picks up 15 years later. We are following the crustiest old fucking detective, played by George C. Scott.
The god. The legend.
Bill Kinderman is his name.
The former General
Patton.
General Patton, that's true, but also General Buck Turgidson, I believe, from Dr. Strangelove.
That's a name right there.
Mm-hmm. Great fucking names in that movie.
We pick up with him and his friend, Father Dyer.
Yep.
In the D.C. suburbs, same area, same location as the first film. 15 years after Damien Karras's death, he is investigating a recent string of killings in which people with K, where their names start with K, are found grotesquely mutilated. In the case of the first victim, his head is cut off and replaced by a head of a statue of Christ, and he is crucifixed, and he has iron ingots nailed in his eye.
Crucifixed, huh?
Crucified. I'll crucifix you.
I'll crucifix it in post, how about that?
And he has iron ingots nailed in his eyes as well. Very gross stuff. Thankfully, we are spared seeing any of that shit.
Well, we do kind of see a sort of... Not actually what it is, but it's like a sort of close analog to that later.
Yeah. But so Kinderman is investigating these, and he believes it is the resurgence of a serial killer whom they believed was caught and executed by electric chair, known as the Gemini Killer. It bears some of the hallmarks of his deeds.
Mm-hmm.
And
he supposedly died 15 years ago also.
Yes, that was his killings began 15 years ago.
Now, if you're a critical thinker, you hear these and you're like, oh, that can't be a coincidence.
Wait, are these connected? So Kinderman and Father Dyer are shooting the shit. Kinderman is kind of a man without faith or in a crisis of faith. Kinderman is...
I think he's... He is not really in a crisis. I feel like he's pretty...
He's non-believer.
Yeah, he's pretty set in what
he believes. When he was at the pub with Dyer, then he was kind of talking in a way that was like, oh, I think, like, less firm, I suppose. More sort of, like, probing. Talking about, like, what, like, is up with this whole God shit. But Father Dyer is this, like, really nice old guy, old priest. He's a good friend of the detective. One day, Father Dyer ends up in the hospital. I don't remember why.
Fuck, what did he have? It was, like, a sort of yearly checkup.
Yeah, something like that.
Some shit like that.
He ends up in this hospital, which is where the bulk of the movie takes place, is this hospital. And then one day, the day Kinderman goes to visit him in there, and the next morning, Father Dyer is found dead in his bed, his body drained of all of its blood, and the blood is cordoned, sort of rationed out into, like, jars next to the bed, and... Above him is written, it's a wonderful life with two L's in wonderful, which is a movie. The night before, then Kinderman and Dyer went to see, or no, the anniversary of Damien Karras's death, they always go and see It's a Wonderful Life playing at the local cinema.
Kind of convenient that it's always playing at the movie theater.
Yeah, kind of
every,
weird.
The same day,
well,
every...
Isn't it like Christmas time around there?
I don't think.
I thought it was I thought the first Exorcist was definitely during, like, the holidays.
Well, shit. It's around there, I think. It looks more, like, autumn.
Yeah.
Ish than, like, wintry.
So the Father Dyer found dead once again. It's like, oh shit, this is the Gemini Killer.
It is happening again.
It is. And to the most degree. And from there, things kind of...
Things stay normal.
Yeah, things get really normal. Nothing spooky happens or anything like
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely not.
So that's the rundown. Should I keep going with it?
No.
Okay. That's the rundown of about the first 30 minutes then.
Yeah. And the rest, you will just have to watch.
Is history.
Thanks for joining us. Signing off. So this movie is fucking... This movie has a whole different energy to the first Exorcist.
Very quickly, before we get into that, I just want to say, because we're not going to be... Like, Father Dyer is not a crucial component of this story or this discussion, unfortunately. So I just want to say, his scenes with George C. Scott were so fucking good.
Their dialogue is fucking insane.
Their chemistry,
like, it's the most insane chemistry I've ever fucking seen in my life. Like
not insane as in, like, what the fuck are these people doing? Insane as in, like...
Pardon me that.
Oh, you really?
Yeah. Like, when fucking Bill starts talking about a carp in his bathtub, it's like, what?
Well, that was awesome.
What are we talking about, man? That was awesome, yeah. But it's, like, so... It's absolutely wild.
You watch them and you're like, I want these two to fuck. That's the chemistry they have. It is insane. And, like, it's really funny, too. Like, I thought the first, like, 30 minutes of this movie were, like, way funnier and way less heavy than, like, I was expecting going into it, and way less than the rest of the movie. But they are so good together. I don't even know who the actor who plays Father Dyer is. I'm not even sure his name.
Ed Flanders.
Ed Flanders, it is. Oh my god, yeah. Ed Flanders. Can you believe that fucking name? And I mean, George C. Scott is, like, awesome in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
But, like, those scenes between the two of them in the beginning are so good and so, like, weird, but, like, so good. Like, unparalleled chemistry.
It's so funny.
Anyway.
But yeah, so the first Exorcist has this energy. It is not, like, scary from the jump, and it's not really scary. It doesn't really get scary until the last, like, half hour or so. But it's mostly just really sad. Mm-hmm. Sort of unexpectedly, I found it. Although I will say there's the one early scene where Ellen Burstyn, I do not remember her name, like, goes up into the attic because she hears some, like, rustling around there. I was like, I don't fucking like this, man.
Because the devil was in the house.
The devil was in the house. The devil was in the attic.
Isn't the devil's name, or the demon's name, like, Puzazu or something like that?
Some shit like that.
That's a good name.
But yeah, The Exorcist is, by and large, not, like, you know, freaking you out at every fucking turn.
It's just very heavy.
It's very super heavy, very sad, and then, like, it... Once it gets scary, then it's, like, this...
It cranks up.
High, sustained, like, short period of, like, really fucking intense stuff.
Yeah.
But The Exorcist 3 is kind of similar, kind of not similar at all. It's a similar sort of pace, as opposed to, like, the horror of it. Because, like, for most of the movie, it's more similar to, like, a
detective movie.
Yeah, like a police procedural or whatever. Like, Joe is going around and trying to... All these people are dying, and he's going and trying to figure out, you know, what the fuck are the clues? What's happening here?
Yeah, which was, like, very unexpected from me, but, like, kind of a really interesting way of, like, approaching this story.
Yeah, but instead of, like, the sort of high intensity being, like... I guess, focused into, like, this one, like, 20-minute chunk of the movie. It's basically the whole fucking thing had me, like, fucking strung the hell up, man. Like, I don't really know. I think part of this is because Blatty is not a, like, refined filmmaker, is that the editing was just fucking insane. The chemistry between Scott and Flanders is insane. The camera angles and shit are just fucking weird. It's such a fucking weird effect where the lack of, like, refined filmmaking basically makes this a better movie than, like, it would be otherwise, because, like, it just creates this fucking super fucking weird and, like, unparalleled energy to it that I, every, like, cut, I was, like, I am, like, tensed the hell up, and I do not know what's going to happen.
It's very, like, precarious, the way it all feels, where it's, like, and, like, this is a movie with, like, very, very, I mean, basically no, like, on-screen violence either.
Yeah.
Which, like, I mean, I can only say that now that I've seen it all, because throughout it, it's, like, this is going, like you're saying, it's, like, literally the next second, like, I feel like something terrible could happen on, and yeah. I will be seeing, witnessing it, but, like, it kind of doesn't.
It's, like, very abrupt, it's very, like, weird cuts in the middle of, like, dialogue, very abrupt cuts from scene to scene.
Mm-hmm. And the chronology is weird, like, there's, like, scenes where it's, like, you're not really sure, like, where they fit in with what you just saw. Like, it's all very precarious and kind of, like, unhinged, frankly.
Yeah, it's a deeply fucking insane movie, man.
And, like, to then just sort of, like, layer on top of that, once again, like, it's a story that's, like, I don't know if it's not as heavy. It's not heavy in the same way the first one is. But, like, it's, like, frankly, it's, like, comparable to, like, a Silence of the Lambs type of, like...
What did remind me of Silence of the Lambs were the scenes between Bill and Brad Dourif. What the fuck was his name? I guess he didn't really have a name.
Patient X, I think is what he's called in IMDb. Again,
those scenes are fucking great.
Those scenes, let's give it up for those two fucking actors. Brad Dourif is the voice of Chucky, and George C. Scott are crazy together in this movie.
Dwarf especially. In those scenes especially. I mean, those are basically the only scenes that he has in the movie.
Yeah.
It's just, like, these long monologues in his prison cell.
Yeah, so, for context, I suppose, then there's, like, a psych ward in this hospital. This hospital is really fucked up. there's a psych ward in this hospital where one of the patients, we come to learn, is kind of acting as, like, this outlet for the demon from the first Exorcist. What is the whole, like,
it's like a conduit,
basically. Yeah, conduit, that's a good example.
Where it's like Damien Karras's body was infected. This shit is so fucking convoluted and weird, but Damien Karras's body was inhabited by the demon when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, around the same time, then the Gemini Killer died as well. He was executed, but his spirit, I guess, was so evil that it just, like, lingered around. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't quite be put to rest. So it linked up with its demon and it took over Karras's body.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has the ability to basically jump from Karras's body to, like, other people's bodies.
Yeah.
In the hospital, primarily. I don't know if, like, we know if that, like, his range extends outside of the hospital or whatever, but then they do the killing for him,
which sounds, like, kind of silly, but, like, isn't really in the movie. Like, I never was like, oh, this is kind of dumb. Like, even whenever, like, patient X is, like, giving his whole monologue about, like, what he is, right, I was like, okay, no, like fucking, it's like, it is convoluted, but I was like, okay, no, like, I fucking get
it.
Yeah,
it's fine.
But, like, so it is, like, Damien Karras's body in this cell, basically. Yeah. Which, like, whenever that showed up, like, who is a friend of Kinderman, the detective, or was a friend, which, like, when that happened, I was like, holy shit, like, is this what fan service was like? Because it's like Jason Miller is the original actor from Exorcist 1, and it's like, I don't know anything else he's ever been in, frankly.
I don't
actually. I think he's in The Ninth Configuration.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but, like, he's not, like, a famous guy. Like, he never went on to have, like, this huge career or anything like that. Like, I've never seen anything else with him. And then there's a part where George C. Scott is in the cell with Patient X, and it's very, like, silhouetted, but you can see that his face is, like, this old weathery ass, like, version of, like, the priest from the first one, and I was like, holy shit, like, let's go, man.
Fuck, what is the guy's name? It's Ian something, the guy from Deadwood and
American. Ian McShane.
He looks a lot like Ian McShane.
Yeah, he does. And that was so cool. I was totally not prepared for that at all, and I was like, oh my god. But then,
yeah, it is pretty cool.
Then in these scenes in which, so Kinderman goes and sort of interrogates patient X here, who is, we understand, as Damien Karras. And in the process of these interrogations, then his like physical like form like changes to represent the Gemini Killer, who we figured that out later. But then that's who's played by Brad Dourif, and like his voice changes as well. Like there are times during their dialogue where it is like Damien Karras and Jason Miller is the actor, and then there are times where like it does just change to Brad Dourif and it's the Gemini Killer again. And that's kind of like, I mean, those are the best scenes in the movie, like straight up.
Yeah, they're up there.
Because like Brad Dourif is just unbelievable in this fucking movie.
He has a fucking energy to him.
Deranged. There's like, he just stares down the camera at parts, and his face and the single tear like coming down.
Oh boy,
and it's like, oh my god. And his voice like modulations are so like,
it's so crazy,
very so bizarre and like unsettling. Like the whole time while watching him, I was like, I had like Chucky's voice in my head of like trying to figure out like, can this guy do it? And it's like, this guy could do fucking any voice on the planet. Like his temperament and mood and like just energy changes so quickly in those scenes where he's talking with the detective that it's like, it is disarming, and he is unbelievable in that.
But anyway, those scenes reminded me a lot of Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff between Hannibal and Clarice. Yeah. Which, this movie came out before Silence of the Lambs, so you wonder how much, you know, inspiration may have been taken from it. But going back to the point, or the thing you said earlier, how this reminded you of Silence of the Lambs, I don't really get that, because I think, like, I don't even know what this reminds me of, if there's anything comparable, because it is so, like, where, like, the first Exorcist was, like, full of, like, this, like, sadness to everything that was happening, right? Like, the scenes with, like, Reagan being, like, treated by doctors and shit, and going into MRIs and stuff, like, that shit was, like, rough.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's like, oh my god, this fucking little girl is like,
or even when she's like tied up in her room
in
her
bed, it's like, holy shit, man, this is fucking brutal. This movie doesn't go down that road. It instead goes down the road of like, oh my god, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. No. It is all like, it is staring into the abyss, and the abyss is fucking staring back, man.
Yeah,
it's intense in a very different sort of way.
It is an oppressive movie.
Yeah, it is not a feeling good, feeling great type of thing. Movie ends and it does not.
It ends like without any like.
It ends and it's like, oh my
ramp off.
God, I'm not feeling good about, you know, humanity in general.
Yeah,
after this one,
it definitely has that vibe, right? Because it's like,
it's very bleak.
In the middle of its sort of, like, serial killer, like, trappings, right? I mean, I guess, like, you know, any serial killer movie is gonna have some of those sorts of qualities, right? Of, like, oh my god, humans are capable of terrible things. And so it does have that, right? Like, stories of, like, the people being beheaded and their bodies, like, and priests, like, bodies being mutilated and shit is, like, certainly, not, happy at all. But it goes further than that, even like it does not rest there, where it makes, and I don't know, I kind of have a hard time explaining it, because it is a weird movie, but like,
yeah,
it's like
there's like an intangible like quality to it. I wonder if part of it is because like the main character is Bill Kinderman is like a fucking 70-year-old guy who, like, watching him, it's like, oh, this is like, this guy is like, like, if shit hits the fan, this guy is not physically going to be able to really stand up to it.
That could be it. Like,
there's a sense of, like,
yeah,
vulnerability just to the sense, just to the, and, like, when you hear that, like, when the Gemini killers like, yeah, and I decide I they agreed to like continue keeping the trademark where I kill people with a K in their name, and then it's like, oh my god, this guy is just going, like, either this guy, either Bill or like it. His family is going to get fucking killed. Yeah, and there's nothing that he can really do to stop it. Right? Yep. It's there's like a powerlessness to everything that's going on.
I had that realization like a little bit after that, like, bit of their conversation, where I was like, Kinderman, oh my god, he's going to be fucking killed in this movie, and he surprisingly didn't. Surprisingly, very little on screen violence, if any, actually.
His daughter almost got her fucking head cut off.
Yeah, she almost got her head cut off. But, like, once again, like...
That whole fucking scene, I was sweating bullets, man. I was like, this photo didn't end well. You gotta get home, man.
Yeah. Oh, the car? Yeah. But I think it's like you said, like, the movie is, like... On top of, like, the serial killer, like, unsettlingness...
Serial killer?
Then there's, like... Then it does feel like this is just, like, staring down, like, some real, like, fucking nihilism, yeah. Like, in a lot of ways, where it's, like, I mean, I think you can, like, overlay, like, a sort of, like, we had said, like, sort of a crisis of faith narrative over top of this pretty easily, but there's that, it's, like, you're staring down, like, a world in which, like, like, these sort of, like, Judeo-Christian tenets are rendered sort of powerless.
Yeah.
In a way that is, like, extremely, like, disturbing. Like, I mean, priests are, like, killed. Multiple priests are killed in this movie. Like, multiple, like, image, like, or artifacts of, like, Catholicism are, like, defaced and, like,
Jesus
vandalized.
Put in blackface.
Jesus is put in blackface. Like, I mean, at the end, there's these, like, very strange visions of, like, hell opening up, and Damien Karras's crucified body rising out. Yeah. And it's, like, it feels very wrong, and it feels very, you've gone down, like, a country road into an area that you don't really, there's no, like, identifiable, like, markings, and you don't feel like you should be here. Like,
I mean, like, the devil uses a priest's body to, like, carry out his work. Like, I don't know if there's a more, like,
yeah,
succinct, like, demonstration of the kind of, I don't know, it's not moral, but, like, the outlook of this movie than that, of, like, oh,
it's just like, hey, like, religion has failed everybody here.
Yeah, like, and, like, the morality that religion provided is, like, never, like that's not strong enough.
Yeah, no, that's, it falters in the face of this evil.
Like, The First Exorcist, it is ultimately a pretty reactionary movie, I think, because, like, it does, you can debate on the, like, true success of it at the end, but, like, the priests come in, and, like, they succeed where, like, modern science and medicine fails, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, they fix Reagan, they get the demon out of the mm-hmm. system, and, like,
at what cost?
There's, like, a sort of subconscious, like,
oh, religion solved
this argument that, like, the old traditions are still meaningful, and they should still be, like, relied upon in some way for the moral problems of society, of contemporary society. So you could say that, like, there is a reactionary bent to The Exorcist. I think that's not a terribly controversial statement. Which, also, that does not necessarily... And, like, that's not a qualitative statement on the movie, because the movie's fucking great.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
If you... Now I'm doing, like, Bernie Sanders finger-wagging right now. Now, do not wrap up a film's quality or a piece of art's quality with its politics, because... then you're gonna look like a fucking clown when you say that The Exorcist was, yeah, sure, it's good, but it's got kind of backwards politics or whatever. Shut the fuck up.
Just say it's good.
It's a good movie.
We fucking know what you mean.
If anything, it makes it more interesting because its politics are not perfect in any way. And this movie also true. Like, this movie is fucking so much more interesting as a weird fucking, like, trip through hell where... that is almost like a rejection of the first film's, like, core message.
I was gonna say, because, like, at the end of the first film, again, because the first film also ends, like, very abruptly, after the exorcism, like, it's pretty much...
Well, there's a bit of a denouement, where they...
Yeah, where they move, like, move out of the house, but it's like, 5 minutes after the exorcism's done. Damon Karras's body is not even cold yet when that movie ends. And, but, like, you do leave the first exorcist feeling like, boy, howdy, are my knuckles white, but it did ultimately end.
But at least the church is there.
The church, yeah, like, the quote-unquote good guys won out in The Exorcist 1, which, like, there really isn't any doubt about, like, you know, the character of Karras and Max von Sydow's priest, right? Like, they are clearly the good guys. But, like, they won out. And here, like, there is an exorcism at the end. Damon Karras' body...
Do we want to talk about that at all?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know how much you've read about this, but, like, this movie, Exorcist
I know 3, that the studio wanted that
in there. Yeah, the studio basically wrote in changes to the script and were like, there needs to be an exorcist scene in this movie because it's called The Exorcist 3, which was apparently a title that they slapped on it and was not originally what it was called. So
that's interesting.
They created the problem that they demanded a solution for. They can go fuck off. But they basically demanded, like, there needs to be an exorcist scene at the end of this movie. And Vladdy was like, okay. And there's, like, some random priest character that shows up for approximately 2 scenes in the movie and then walks into the fucking hospital at the end and is like, it's fucking go time, baby. Yeah. Time to kick some ass. And does an exorcist. And he gets fucked up.
Oh, he gets absolutely wrecked. I don't think, like, I think that character's inclusion is, like, I mean, the most sort of, like, problematic part of the movie, in my opinion, because it is not problematic in the sense of, like, oh, this was a bad idea, but, like, problematic in the sense of just doesn't really serve a purpose at all outside of that.
My opinions on this exorcist scene are, like,
I thought it was a good scene.
It's fun.
It was I thought it was an exciting climax, honestly. I am curious what how this movie would have ended without it.
Yeah.
Like,
do we just have fucking Bill Kilt shooting fucking Karras?
Well, there is this exorcist on Damon Karras' body. It's very intense, very sort of, like, epic. Like we said, the floor opens up to the visions of hell and brimstone.
I believe in slime. And stink. I fucking love George C. Scott,
he's so good in this movie.
Great actor.
And then it ends, The Exorcist concludes with a moment of, like, respite where Damon Karras tells Kinderman to kill him. And Kinderman does not really hesitate. He just shoots him, like, twice in the chest.
And then
shoots him in the head. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
But, like, it's weird because it's functionally, like, a similar ending to the first Exorcist, I find, where, like, the demon has been exorcised out of this person's body. Like, we can presume that these grotesque killings are going to end now. That may not be the case, but we don't know. Like, we're left on what should be a positive note of, like, you know, the bad guy lost, right? The devil is out of out of the picture now.
He's been devil's out of business.
Expelled. This evil presence should be gone. And where the first movie, there is kind of like a feeling of, like, we won.
The last couple shots of the first movie, it's like Reagan and her mom are, like, driving out of Georgetown, and, you know, we see the steps that Karras fell down again, but it's not necessarily treated like an ominous like sort of symbol, like it really is here, but it's more like oh shit, like, remember what happened here, like, remember the sort of sacrifice that it took to get to this point, right? And it's like, okay, well, life carries on out here. After this, the final shot of this movie, I believe, is Damien Karras's body being, like, or his grave being, like, fucking dug up, and just, like, the end shot is just of his tombstone.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, this, like, there's no sort of sense of, like, moving on after this.
I think even more than that, though, it's like there's no period of, like, reconciliation after the exorcism scene.
Nope.
And there's no feeling of, like, satisfaction, no feeling of accomplishment or of, like, security that's obtained. And I don't know why, but I would theorize that it's because it is Karis who, or number one, Karis was killed in the process of this exorcism, whereas Reagan survives mm-hmm. in the first one. And number two, what we know about Damien Karis, knowing that he is a servant of Jesus, that he is a prolific member of the Catholic Church of this area, and that in the struggle between good and the sort of like epic struggle of good and evil, like that these movies are like the back or reside in front of, then it's like Damien Karras like clearly represents good in many ways, or and then compromised in this one, and that he does not leave with his wife, and that evil has not won, but it has taken
one.
But it has taken a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't, like, evil hasn't necessarily won, like, within the confines of these movie frames.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah.
The sort of implications of what's happened in the movie, it certainly seem to suggest
yeah.
a far more pessimistic outlook, which I don't think is necessarily reflective of Blatty's, like, Blatty, I think, remained, like, a devout Catholic for all his life. Like, I don't think that he was ever, you know, I don't think he ever, like, strayed from the path, so to speak.
Like, the real ending of this movie is 6 months in the future when Kinderman either is a chronic alcoholic or shoots himself in the head.
Yeah.
Like, that is the true ending of this movie that we don't see, but that no doubt, or that feels, like, yeah. inevitable.
All his fucking friends are dead. His family was almost fucking killed.
And he has come face to face with an indescribable evil that, like, sort of saturates the world, and that there is no real escape from.
Oh, yeah.
And that the sort of, like, mythic weapons of, like, you know, faith and Christianity are just completely
they're ineffective.
Dull in the face of. And it is terrifying.
Yeah. It settles into the bones of, like, oh. I don't fucking like this.
A very unclean movie.
Yeah.
In a way that's weird, right? Because, like, it's not, like, Jake and I aren't really not, like, religious people at all. Like, I mean, we grew up Catholic. As I love to tell people. But, like, we don't really, like, religion really isn't a part of our lives at all right now. But, and I think maybe that says something about maybe more sort of, like, broader, like, the place that religion has in, like, human civilizations, right? Where it's, like, even us, like, after watching this, right? It's, like, this is, like, unclean. This is a filthy sort of, like, feeling to, like, to see these sort of, like, values and institutions, like, just rendered utterly sort of, like, weak and spineless.
I mean, part of it is, like, the Catholic Church of the Exorcist movies, not the Catholic Church of the real world, right? Like, Catholic Church of the Exorcist movies seems to function exclusively out of fucking Georgetown and, like, helps out kids with their exorcists and, like, has, like, youth programs and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, that's cool. But even when that is even, like, not even sufficient to face any sort of evil that is, like, emerging, then it's like, oh boy, there's nothing. What hope is there for the real Catholic Church?
Yeah, like, then there is nothing.
Or any actual religious organization.
Yeah, and the sort of, like, the kneecapping of that is, like, sort of existentially sort of, like, dread-inducing mm-hmm. of, like, these should be things that are bigger than us, and in the face of just pure evil, they are nothing. And, like, so what does that mean about anything, right?
Yeah, what does that mean about us?
Yeah. And that is kind of where this movie's, like, horror comes from. We're kind of going a little bit long, but do we want to talk about that scene?
The hallway. Fucking, I don't really know how much needs to be said about that.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's up there. with, you know, the best horror moments probably of all time.
So there is, right? Yeah, there's the Exorcist 3, I think. I mean, I feel like people consider this to have the best, like, jump scare in horror movie history.
It's not a scary movie, like, by and large.
Yeah.
In, like, a traditional sense. No. Like, I'm like, the things that are happening on screen are not, like, surprising me or, like,
spooky.
Don't get me freaked out and stuff. But
once again, no violence.
Yeah, there's no violence on screen until the very end. But there's a moment where the camera is just, like, stationary, looking down the hallway in once the again, hospital.
A weird shot.
Yep, very fucking weird. Like, compositionally, it's like, I don't know what the focus here is.
Yeah, right? Is it a wall? Is, like, it the fucking doors? Because
the one woman is, like, just, like, on the edge of the fucking, mm-hmm. like, hallway.
Yep.
Like,
you can, like, barely see her.
And it's like, is this who I'm supposed to be looking at?
Yeah.
It's so fucking weird, man. But it works, because...
Honestly, like, this whole movie feels like it culminates, or it builds up to this sickle seed. Yeah,
it pretty much does. It feels like, where, you know, this nurse is alone at night, freaked out. Well, there's some, like, guards there.
We don't even know this nurse's name.
No. Keating.
Oh, that's right, Keating. Starts with a K.
Yeah.
I guess where this is going.
Well, she is, like, something's freaking her out a little bit, so she's going to these little rooms down the hallway, and the camera's just sitting there watching her.
Not moving at all.
She's moving in, and she opens the one door, and, you know, there's some guy that's, like, taking a bath or whatever.
Or, well, really his ice is, like, melting or whatever. Or he's sleeping, I think. He's, like, a doctor, and he's just, like, passed out sleeping in this room. And he's, like, and he, like, jumps up, and, like, that freaked me out. I was, like, oh, my God. Because, like, he just comes out of nowhere, and he's, like, hey, leave me alone. Come on now. I'm trying to get some sleep.
Yeah, she goes back out. She goes back into the room where Father Dyer died. And she, I guess, does a little look around, and is like, all right, seems all right in here. Nothing to be freaked out over. She closes the door, turns around, walks away. Door opens. Somebody, I do not know who the fuck, still do not know who that is. What? How do you even describe them? But somebody, a figure, comes rushing out of the room with these fucking huge scissors, and, like, the zoom that the camera does is absolutely fucking insane. Like, just like the most violent fucking rack zoom you've ever fucking you've ever seen in your life to this, like, figure it racing
in like this nun like garb. Like, looks like she's wearing, like, or whoever it is wearing, like, a habit kind of.
And they just race out of this room behind this nurse and with the fucking scissors up at their neck, and then hard cut to, like, the next morning or whatever.
It is insane. It is, I think, truly the
Zach most... jumped out of the fucking couch.
I don't know if I've ever jumped as much as I did at that one from any other scare ever from that, as I did it from that one.
Now, I've seen this before because I'm a masochist, and I looked this up, like, a few years ago, and I was like, holy shit, that scared the fuck out of me, man. So, like, I knew it was coming, but...
And I knew, for what it's worth, I also knew that, like, this movie had, like, what was considered the greatest jump scare of all time. But I had never seen it before.
When the camera was set up there, I was like, oh, here we go. And then it cut to her in the room with the guy with the ice.
I kind of thought that was it. And I was like, because that, like, freaked me out. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, no.
And it came out of nowhere, right? But after she leaves that room, and the same shot.
Yeah, when it cut to that shot, then I was like, I was wrong. This wasn't the part at all. And then it cut back, and I was like, oh, wait, no.
I was so tense during... Absolutely. After she left the room, my heart was pounding. Like,
absolutely.
Truly, like, non-hyperbolic, could hear that shit in my ears, like, pounding after she left the room, because I was like, why are we back here? Like, what is happening? Like, this, something is so wrong. And, like, I mean, that's the movie in general, is, like, something is just very wrong at all times.
Yeah.
But, like, in this scene, it was, like, so... Like, I didn't even see, like, the scissors because by the time it was zooming, I was already, like, fucking jumping.
You were in the other room.
I was like, oh my god. And from the, I mean, after that, I mean, the movie's all downhill from there. It's easy fucking moving. But that's truly it. I mean, that scene is, like, famous now, among, especially among, like, horror fans, but, like, for good reason. It is absolute, it is insane.
Yeah.
Tremendously scary. And it's, like, long, too. It's, like, a 3.5 minute, like, just camera shot, static.
Yeah.
With nothing happening. That you're like, and that by the end, it is, it's so weird how that works, right? Because it's like, you could have that, and like, have, like, the nurse doing all her stuff, and it's like, by the end, like, static shot for that long, like, you are going to be fucking heart pounding, even though nothing has happened, like, quite literally nothing has happened. Like, the nurse has fucking, like, checked a few rooms, right? The cops have, like, walked in, talked to her, and left. Like, nothing has happened, and you are going to be sweating by the end.
Yeah, it's one of the best uses of, like, a long shot that I feel like I've ever seen in a movie. But yeah.
So good.
I feel like that probably does it on The Exorcist 3. Any last thoughts?
I think that movie was great. I think that movie is, like...
It's weird that it
might
it
like,
never
just
really,
as good as the original.
It's weird that it didn't have... Or it doesn't seem like it... had much appreciation until, you know, somewhat recently.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder why that is. Just, like, brand recognition. Like, oh, this is not The Exorcist that I thought it would be.
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's weird. I mean,
it
is...
the second one being bad sort of got people being like, oh, it's not gonna be good.
It is also just a weird movie, too. Like, not what you would expect from a horror movie, not what you would expect knowing the first one. But I honestly think it's, like, just as good as the first one. I don't know if it's better, but, like, I think they are pretty much equal in my mind after watching both.
First one is better, in my opinion, than this one, but probably just primarily because it's a lot tighter narrative plot-wise.
Yeah.
Than this one
is. I mean, yeah, for sure.
But this Exorcist 3 has just an unparalleled sort of, like... cursed energy to it that I very few movies have.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's worth quite a bit.
This is also one of the only movies I've seen with George C. Scott. I guess the only other one might be Strangelove. He is, I guess, just another thing I want to say is that he is awesome in this movie. Like, he is, like, fucking awesome, and he's like old and crusty, like he's like 70 fucking years old, and when they film this shit, like he is at the age where like people stop acting.
people definitely stop acting in these roles.
Yeah, but he is awesome in this, like, just straight up so fucking good. I mean a lot of all of the acting is like really great in this, and the scenes between him and Father Dyer and the scenes between him and Patient X are fucking wildly good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much all I gotta say.
Yeah.
That does it for our reboot of sorts, and we still go for an hour.
Wow.
But see, we're not doing anything else. We're just doing this, so works out.
Mm-hmm.
Exorcist 3 is fantastic, and any fans of the original or horror should watch it. As far as the future episodes of this show go, Jake, do you feel that there are any topics coming up that you are inclined to discuss?
Well, Zach, I'm glad you asked.
To give a preview to the folks.
Dragon Ball is, of course, on the horizon.
Oh, man.
Feels like it's been on the horizon for a very long time now, and we should actually try to hunker down and fucking finish the Cell fight.
Yeah, we should.
But that, I have to imagine that'll be the next one.
Well, you might imagine that, but you might be wrong, because I have some I'd like to talk about, but go ahead.
But other than that, you know, whenever inspiration strikes.
Good enough.
Don't know.
We are continuing
I don't know.
We are continuing to watch some scary movies for up until Halloween, of course. So, some of them may make an appearance. For me, I've recently read Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. And that is a fantastic book that I would not mind having a conversation about. And as well, the Canadian like punk band Metz released an album, Atlas Vending is the name, that I have been listening to a lot and that I'm really, really, really liking a lot, and that I might have to rope you into a conversation about. But that's all I see on the horizon. Other than that, if nothing else, then thank you, folks, for listening.
Howdy-do.
Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes.